Greetings, everyone. My name is Kaz.
This is Medibot.
And this is episode X of the Skulls Cast. Let me actually find out what episode it is now that I have the capability of doing so with my checklist.
I want to say 12? No, we're past 12.
No, we were way past 12, matey.
Maybe 19?
That's closer. Thinking. Oh, man, where do I keep these files? This is a little embarrassing. I don't remember where the file's at. Okay, hold on. There it is. And then this folder. Wait. Where the heck's the folder? Ah, it's on the other drive. I was looking in the wrong drive, Medibot.
It's 19.
And it's not 19 until I say it's 19, though.
Okay, can it...
Oh, it also isn't. It's 20.
Dang it!
Bam!
But I bid the highest without going over.
Well, that's true. I didn't bid, so I lose out. I've never seen someone not bid on the Price is Right. Like, I do not believe in the bid. Like,
I guess you're probably allowed to, but who would go on the Price is Right in order to do that?
It's true. They do screen people, and you know beforehand when you, like, go... if you're like in the pool of being picked. We both knew somebody actually who went on the Price is Right.
Yes.
So I guess we could ask him about it if
ask him about it. I don't know if I want to talk to him again.
Well, really?
Yeah.
He wasn't so bad. What?
Maybe that was just a bad day for me.
Oh. That's weird. I don't know. I'd be delighted to see him again. We were both ushers at our other friend's wedding, so I guess I had a slightly closer interaction with him in the past, being an usher.
Episode 20
is about design elements.
And
design elements in games. And I'm going to say any game because we're going to talk about Magic and we're going to talk about video games, so I kind of have to cover my bases. And I am going to do my best in the trauma in my life here currently. It's I'm having a bit of a struggle with the hot water heater.
Is it too hot or too cold?
Well, the other day, and this was really suspicious. The other day, the water coming out of the tap was boiling and actually vaporizing before it hit the sink, which was quite a sight to see.
So too hot.
Quite a bit too hot. And today it is not. So there's no hot water. So I think...
You used all of today's hot water yesterday.
Day before yesterday, which is more the problem.
Hot water.
I am living on borrowed hot water. I have... That was hot heat debt.
Heat debt.
They talk about heat death? Well, this is heat debt. I owed myself this temperature from before.
Conservation and all that.
Point is, I cannot take a shower yet, so I'm trying to warm up some water in the tank the old-fashioned way. And my troubleshooting efforts with the hot water heater have so far been to press the one button that is on the heater itself, which I looked up at the manual, is a reset button. After hitting this button, it made a noise, and the noise continued, so I can only presume that means that it's working. So we'll check back on that after the cast. I mean I, because I'm here, Medibot's there, and we're casting.
The twain shall meet.
About design elements and whether they go bottom up or top down. Because I am very much a top-down designer whenever Medibot and I start talking about video games. And I am sometimes a top-down designer and sometimes a bottom-up designer when we're talking about Magic cards. And from my experience, Medibot is a bottom-up designer when we talk about video games. And I don't know what he is when we talk about Magic cards. What are you?
Pretty much top-down.
Okay, you're definitely, now that I think about it, yes. When we talk about Magic.
Because all I do is make 5-drop blue enchantments. That's the one type of card I ever want to make.
But that's bottom up, and that's part of the point.
Right, but which is to say that, like, I get some goofy idea, and it always ends up being a 5-drop blue enchantment. Because I just love 5-drop blue enchantments. They just do so much. Which is to say they do nothing until you do something else.
All of the ideas that he thinks of at the top end up distilling down mechanically into a 5-drop blue enchantment. Okay, now. So the crucial point of the argument here, and I don't think it's really an argument, but a discussion rather, we'll get to the arguing later, is that you have top-down design, which means you take some thematic or motif idea, something that represents something that happens that is a player's potential experience, perhaps from the world, perhaps from something they've read, and you create the game elements to fit something like that would work. In a fantasy setting, players have some expectation of what a goblin does and how large it is and his attitude, his capabilities, what he looks like, what he might, you know, if they met one, what he would be like and what he might do. He probably wouldn't fly. It would be unusual to see a flying goblin. Unless he's riding something.
He found a kite.
Unless he's tied to a kite. Perhaps he's in a balloon. Perhaps he's part of a balloon brigade. These are okay reasons for him to be flying, but he needs that reason if we're going top down. Bottom up is the opposite of way. There's no consideration at the outset of what the thing in the video game or playing card game or whatever game about what it represents. It's a unit, it's a variable, it's a machine component that fits somewhere in the design space of the rules of the game, and once you have this perfect, like, mechanical design, you then figure out what it might be, you know, based on what it is, and that's bottom up. That's mechanics first. If we're talking Magic the Gathering, there's a reason to use both of these methods. Ultimately, both methods must at some point be considered, because nothing but top-down designs leaves you with a game that in all likelihood doesn't work and probably only appeals to a subset of your potentially larger player base. So we're going to start out by talking about something that isn't Magic, because I'm trying my best to keep this, you know, not strictly a Magic the Gathering discussion with, like, card designs and mechanical elements, because that, for one, Mark Rosewater has treaded this to death already, and, you know, anytime and says, oh, this is a top-down design, this is supposed to represent a baby angel wearing boob armor, and she protects all humans. Twee! And then, like, it's gone. There's no... Where can you go from there? I've heard it too many times. So instead, we're going to talk about a game that you and I have played, Medibot. And perhaps that others have also played. We're going to talk about the Super Mario Brothers.
The Super Mario Brothers.
Super Mario Brothers.
Okay.
Now, I don't know the proper name of this game, but it's the one that comes paired with Duck Hunt. It's the one that is, like, the first video game that so many of us have played. Is like, you get an NES and this came with it. And
unless you got one later and then it came with 3.
Yeah, then it came with 3, but 3 is definitely not what I'm talking about. Because my point with this is, the first one, and it's, yeah, it's one of the first, whatever. I'm not talking about Jumpman, I'm not talking about Donkey Kong. I'm talking about Super Mario Brothers. As an archetype, as a first, it was basically all mechanical. And this is anathema to, like, modern understanding of Mario canon and everything, okay? Because it's like, oh, of course that happened, that's flavorful. No, it's flavorful now because it was mechanical then. If you forget any knowledge you have of future games, what is going on the screen, okay? There's a little man. He has a mustache. He can jump. Okay, so that's something that we can top down or flavor wise understand. We've seen men in life. We've seen people who jump. We've seen people with mustaches. We've seen people wearing suspenders. Okay, these are all things that we have some expectation for what they are capable of. And so, okay, I see a guy running and jumping. You know, every one of us who played the game as little kids, we either called him the man, because he was a man on a screen, or Mario, because we read the name of the game, Super Mario Brothers, and intuited that this man had a name, and his name was Mario, okay? And that's about as far as the flavor extends. Because beyond that, we're in this world of completely unusual things. A question mark block, for instance.
What's is that? Inside the box?
Okay, it's a box.
It's a box.
I mean, if you watched Let's Make a Deal as a kid, then you've seen boxes with question marks on them before. Why do you have to hit it from beneath to open it? Because that's a rule.
Because...
No, there's not...
Because that's how you hit it.
That is.
That is how hitting happens.
Yes, it works that way because it mechanically must work that way in the game. There's no reason to expect that to work in the first place. You have to know or figure it out from what the game is.
You can jump, because so you try jumping into things.
And as soon as you see that it works, the game has taught you that it works, and you have learned a game mechanic. Another flavorful thing. Okay, when you stomp on a Goomba, you jump on top of him, he goes squish and he flattens a little bit. Okay, that's a tiny nod towards flavor in this otherwise extremely mechanical and very bizarre and irrational game. Because I've seen things get squished when I jump on them. You know, a cardboard box, for instance. I jump on it, it goes flat. Okay. The Goomba disappears after a moment, which is weird, because things that I stomp on, they just get flat. They don't vanish. So that's another little bit of mechanics to the game. You know, he poofs.
Disappears. We don't need it to be visible.
Yeah.
Anymore. Did the obstacle has been surpassed?
Did a number come out of those at that time, or did the numbers floating up pop later, like a score thing? Because I know
that. I want to say in one, no numbers came out.
Well, there was a score on the screen.
There was a score on the screen. You did earn points for this action.
Yeah, so you saw points, and that's just totally mechanical. I mean, we only think about points in life because we've seen them in video games and in other game capacities. They're not a top-down element. They are a mechanical element. Okay, we get introduced one by one to mechanical elements in Super Mario Brothers, and the game strings them along in interesting ways, introducing them, for the most part, one at a time, and then like paired mechanics to create new and interesting challenges until the game ultimately ends. It basically has no story. It's all mechanics with tiny nods towards flavor from beginning to end. And that's it. And since then, since it got established as something that was mechanically true here, they later could flesh that out and create explanations and little flavor reasons for it until you arrive at something way, way later, like, I don't know, Paper Mario Thousand Year Door, where because of the mechanical truths, not just facts, but truths established in the first game, you have flavor elements in Paper Mario Thousand Year Door. You have a way to expect what might happen without trying anything mechanically in the first place, simply because you recognize a flavorful element from the past. You know what a Goomba is. You know what a Koopa is and what he is capable of. We called them turtles when I first saw him, because that's what they kind of looked like. Has a little, beak.
Yep.
And he has a shell.
There's green turtle and red turtle.
Yeah, there's a... I've seen green turtles.
Red turtle is a coward.
I haven't seen red turtles before, but, you know. And it sort of made sense that he was, You know, he has a shell, so fire. Well, no, the other guys had the harder shells, so the fire didn't work on them. But you couldn't flatten him because his shell is too hard to flatten, so it gets booted. Okay, so that's another little bit of top down stuff. So what other things are in the Super Mario Brothers that we can ascribe any kind of flavor to without thinking of them as a mechanics first element? Because my guess is that they're a precious few.
Closer to the end of the game, when you get to like World 7 and World 8, you start seeing more like castles and stone walls in the backgrounds of the stages.
Okay.
And you'll have levels that are still, I guess, outside themed, and you get the normal outside music. But there will now be, you know, a large stone wall in the background indicating that maybe you're traversing some, you know, very large fortress complex sort of deal.
A
new place.
Any background element is inherently mechanics neutral. Like, unless it is serving to, like, visibly obscure something that's going on the screen so that an actual mechanical element can hide or camouflage itself against it, for instance. Background can only be flavor in that sense. And so, sure, I mean, you know, I go down in the pipe and I'm in a dark place and the background goes away.
Yeah.
I don't know
That's
why.
That's how you know you're underground.
Yeah, you know you're underground, even though all of the, you know, all the same enemies are around, more or less.
They look different.
They look different because of the limited palette.
Right. But you're like, oh, you know, Goombas above ground look like this, but Goombas underground look like this, but they're both Goombas. Goomba.
Yeah.
Other than that, within the whole individual world structure, the fourth level of each world is always a castle. It is always more cramped, and it's always on fire.
Well, the crampedness and the fire are, again, mechanical elements, because the cramps limit your jump and create different challenges for you. The fire creates new hazards. And that can kill you, so that's probably also mechanics first. And putting them in a sequence establishes a mechanical pattern.
Yes. But mechanically, there is no difference between an empty pit and a lava pit.
There is, because a lava pit is slightly higher on the screen. So you die a little sooner.
You die a little sooner, but in both cases, if you fall into one of these, the player dies.
Yes. I mean...
Actually, does the lava... I don't... In Mario 1, I don't know if touching the lava actually kills you.
Oh, man.
It may, in fact, just be a visual effect over a pit.
I might be busted right there. I haven't played it in long enough.
I wouldn't bet money on this.
I mean,
this might be me misremembering something.
And of course, my greater experience is with Super Mario Bros. 3, where I am sure as sugar that you touched lava and when
and
the visible pixels
touch. Mine is with World, where
you
like definitely that. Also touched the lava.
Yeah. Ooh, I think the tiebreaker is if we could have an invincible star and then run on lava. Because that would provide a mechanical difference. I know for a fact that if you have a star and you jump in a pit, you still die.
Right.
But if being the invincibility star lets you run on lava, then that would be mechanically different. At any rate, we're sort of nitpicking over half-remembered things from this game that we both played
lava.
A long time ago, and the difference between lava and a pit. And supposing, for instance, that it is just a visual effect, then yes, there is no mechanical difference between the lava and a pit in any other world, and that would be another flavor element, so I can at least with all those clauses and ifs say yes, that is a flavor element.
Why are they fireballs?
I don't know. Throws. He turns red.
Yeah.
And so red means fire, and they're sort of shiny, so they kind of look like fireballs, and that's the only reason I called them that when I was a kid. Why they come from a flower? I don't know. That doesn't make any sense. I have never associated fires with flour.
Why does the mushroom make you bigger?
Fire. Also, no idea.
Yeah. It just does. And you learn that it does. And you just, learn that this symbol means something in the game.
You know, short of a kind of like Alice in Wonderland thing, like eat me, drink me kind of thing.
I want to say that actually is the motivation behind it. Because there've been countless interviews with Miyamoto about...
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
I think it actually is supposed to be sort of a nod to Alice's adventures. Because Mario's world is a very curious one, much like Alice's.
I'd have to go read the English master student's thesis work comparing and contrasting the insane worlds of Alice in Wonderland with the world of Super Mario Brothers and the Mushroom Kingdom.
But we agree that they are both insane.
Yes.
Okay.
Even hearing it from the horse's mouth, I wouldn't even believe that. I can at best ascribe to it a kind of far gone coincidence. If the mushroom itself were a cake that said eat me on it, then I would say, okay, sure. But it's like, okay, one man eats a mushroom, gets bigger in a video game. A girl in a book eats a cake and grows huge. I don't know. Like, what else could we have to link that? At any rate, that's a very far gone and tenuous link at best. I would not expect a child to see the mushroom and say, oh, that's just like an Alice in Wonderland. I'll bet I'll grow huge.
No. Well, not until you've touched it.
Yes. Well, certainly not the same way that you would see an owl enemy on the screen and expect him to fly because he is an owl.
This is the thing bird. You know about owls.
You know that birds fly, so they do, and then, okay, it's a bird. You recognize it. So yeah, it's a mechanics first game, and
yep.
I think we forget that. Certainly by now. I mean, how long have we been in the Mushroom Kingdom and gradually learning all kinds of facts about it?
At least 25 years.
And I think even today, the games are heavily mechanics oriented, and they, especially any like challenge run or challenge stages that they do show a clear intent to establish obstacle courses and sequences where you have to use mechanics in a certain way in order to advance. And the only reason we have expectation, I think I'm using this term correctly, a priori knowledge over any of these things is simply because they've been ground into us. We know that a dragon is a 5/5 flying creature. Of course he is. And he costs 6 mana because dragons are 6 mana 5/5 flyers. Is this like repeated enough, and it'll get in there? We know that oofies mess with artifacts, unless they don't, because they're messing with your kitchen instead.
A frying pan is a sort of artifact.
Who's
a frying pan that got printed?
Yeah. So the only reason we know what oofies do is because it's like oofie. This oofie. This oofie. This oofie. This oofie. The hell's an oofie?
It's the greatest ape of all.
They made it up. They didn't want to use the word brownie on 2 cards in Ice Age, so they had Findhorn Brownies and then Brown Oofy. And that was it. That was the end of, Forever after, we have had the oofy creature type. Mario eats the mushroom and he gets huge. It's just a fact of life, kid.
Just touch mushrooms unless they're clearly bad. But they'll look like they're upset at you.
Yeah, that one looks angry. He's an enemy in disguise. So where is the I guess where's the big difference between that and a modern game that's made with mechanics first in mind? So I think we have blinders on to how strictly mechanical Mario Brothers was in so many ways. Almost to the point where I can use the word strictly with total safety. Which I can't, but yeah.
Do it anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so modern games, mechanical. Well, let's think about Mario Galaxy 2.
Okay. Well,
one. Have you played either of them?
I've not played either, but I've watched them played. I think, technically speaking, I have played number one because I was your, like, shots-wielding co-pilot for that, and that was me interacting with the game and making things happen, so yes, I did play
you
it.
You were the helper.
Yes.
You were the co-star.
The co-star, yes, because I shot little bits.
Bits. Candy.
You collected the bits, and I shot the bits.
Yeah.
You were playing Mario game, I was playing Quake.
You were playing bits, except I get to control the camera. You control the gun. In that game, you know, you had a fire flower power-up. You also had an ice flower power-up. And, with both of them, they let you throw balls of energy, or opposite of energy, I guess. The game was very specific about when it would give you one of those, and it would run out after 15 seconds. You couldn't just carry it around with you. Because they had designed these power-ups to be like, okay, you know, you can get the power-up and solve your problem in 18 seconds, go.
Did they throw up a timer on the screen?
No.
Huh.
The closest thing you got to that was that special music played when you had one of those power-ups, and you could sort of recognize musical cues after a while.
Hmm.
Be like, oh, you know, the power-up's about to run out, and you'd start blinking, and then after a second or two after that, you would lose the power-up. It also didn't, you know, I guess count as a hit in the same way that it did in, not in Mario 1, but in later games. You got hit with the fire flower, you would lose your fiery power and merely be big, merely be super. That's because the 3D Marios work off an entirely different system. Well, 3D Marios, other than Mario 3D Land, work off an entirely different system whereby you have, you know, this hits meter, essentially. You have your power meter, whatever you'd like to call it. And this is like, you can get hit this many more times before you snuff it. There was no longer a concept of small Mario, big Mario, fire Mario. You got rid of that. That was the old system, where you knew how many hits you had left based on your size.
Yeah.
Are you small? You have no hits left, don't get hit. Are you big? You have one hit left, be careful.
It seems strange that they would undercut their, like, main mechanical thing from the first game. It's like Mario starts small, then he gets big. That was fundamental to that game. But
yeah,
the character himself discarded that as he evolved.
Yeah, after you know, Mario World still had that.
Yeah.
Yoshi's Island was a weird side game and did not feature Mario proper as the main character, so we can sort of skip over that. So the next game after that is 64, at which point we have our fun little 8-pie slice machine.
And you have like tiny. You had Tiny Huge Island.
Yes.
But that didn't actually change Mario's character model, but rather placed the character model in different environments.
Yes, one in which you are huge and one in which you are tiny.
Hmm.
If you are tiny, other things seem huge. If you are huge, other things seem tiny. But yeah, the 3D Mario gets rid of the whole core mechanic of, you know, in old games you needed to punish the player whenever possible, so one hit and you're dead. You know, the power-up, the sought-after item, gives you an additional hit, and you know if you have it or not because you are big. We get rid of that, and we get it back not until Mario 3D Land, which is a very recent game.
Mm. On the 3DS. Because, that, I mean, that was mostly a 2D platformer, right?
Mario 3D Land?
Yeah.
It is in 3D. It is fully in 3D, and you are using all three dimensions most, if not quite all of the time. Where was I going with that?
Well, I mean, I actually don't know, because I have not seen this game played.
No. There are large bits of Mario 3D Land where it is 3D much in the same way that your old arcade beat-em-ups are 3D, which is that you have the forward and back plane.
Right, so you
that
have...
you can go on that isn't always super meaningful, because sometimes your obstacles will just by default occupy the entire depth of movement, so you're essentially playing a 2D game for a little while.
Okay, so that's stepping into foreground and background, but that's still running around in 2D, basically, and occasionally switching between planes.
Right. But then you do have parts that are properly 3D and in an open, just completely open area, much like your Mario 64.
And so you also get camera controls and ways to, like, look around and...
Usually the areas in which this happens are small enough, and they sort of get discretized, so that you don't actually have... I want to say, like, camera control, because there is simply a correct camera vantage point.
Hmm. That's the God of War style.
The difference being...
So is it fair to say, and I'm asking this from total ignorance of the game, is it fair to say that for the most part you're using, like, 2D rules for jumping around and hitting blocks and growing large?
Actually, mostly, yeah. I'd say close to half the time you're pretty much playing a 2D game. Or an effectively 2D game, in which is to say you are, you know, at any given time, you need only think in a 2D plane.
Okay. That's kind of what I was driving at, and why I suspect they were able to reintroduce the tiny, huge thing. Because it makes more sense mechanically to have that happen in a 2D game than a 3D game.
Of course. Again, you can also, in Mario 64, Sunshine, Galaxy, Galaxy 2, were all more 3D, you had multiple hits, and the levels were, at least in 64 and Sunshine, very much about, like, dumping you off in a level and saying, go, you know, find the thing. You know, complete the task, whatever the task happens to be. You know, multiple tasks in each level. In Galaxy and Galaxy 2, they became quite a bit less about just, you know, running about, mucking about in the level, and were a bit more linearized, but the individual, I guess, set-piece environments were still very distinctively three-dimensional. But, you know, you'd get onto one three-dimensional set piece, you'd do the thing you needed to do there, and then get shuttled to the next three-dimensional set piece.
Okay, so they did have a goalpost, as it were. Because, you know, Mario 1, we're talking about move to the right to advance.
Yes.
There's a goalpost. You just have to touch it, and then that's the level.
Yes. Or,
you know, what have you, even if that goalpost is an axe.
Sometimes it was an axe.
Yeah. It's like beginning to end. I sort of lost my train of thought on this one.
3D Mario's, you know, 64. In 64, you could go into a level, and you know, it'd tell you like, ah, here's a clue for the star you can collect.
Hmm.
You know, it'd give some snappy 3 or 4 word name / instructions, but you could go off and do whatever you wanted.
Now, in some cases, it would change the things that were on the level, yeah.
Sometimes,
I mean, races with Koopa the Quick, for instance.
Yes. Sometimes it would. Sometimes you needed to pick a specific star for certain facts to be true about the level.
Yeah.
This was much more true in Mario Sunshine, where essentially it was more close to maybe even actually impossible to, you know, go in saying, I want X, like, for, you know, Shine X and collect Shine Y.
Now, Mario Sunshine actually has a lot more flavorful elements to it, I think, than the other Mario games that we've talked about.
It does.
Because it had this fundamental mechanic of the fire hose.
You had flood.
And we know how water pistols work, and
and
fire hoses are fun, and we know the various kinds of things that water does.
We know that if we are good, we will be allowed to drink from it.
Did that happen in Mario Sunshine? Could you take a sip?
I think at some point you did pump water directly into someone's mouth.
So,
although that may have been that was to destroy them.
Oh, okay. But I mean, once you have Mario pumping water from a thing that pumps water, you can do lots of flavorful things.
You think, like, what can you do with a pressurized jet of water?
You can use the water to fill up buckets, to inflate balloons. You can use it, if it's pressurized, to jets, because it's a water jet. You've seen, I mean, that's a little fantastical in terms of the amount of force required, but yeah, whatever. It's a device.
But you know that the water coming out of the hose is forceful. And
yeah, I mean,
you know that if something is forceful enough, it's a jet.
Yeah, if you let it, like, if you don't hold a hose at the head, it'll flail around. That's force coming out of it, so you kind of understand that. And, you know, we know more or less how water works, so we see it happen in the game, and we can reasonably be expected to actually intuit things to do rather than be mechanically introduced to them one at a time and be literally told what we need to do. You know, they say, oh, clean up this paint stain, whatever. It's like, what is my one tool?
I just say clean it up.
What is my one tool? It's a fire hose.
What is my one tool? You know, because in this, like, you still have running, you still have jumping, you still have your acrobatics, but basically your one tool is the flood. And it is the application of water in some fashion, usually pressurized, to your problem. So they say clean it up, it means apply water to it. They don't spell it out for you because they assume that you know you have a water thingy on your back, right, Mario? That thing you've been carrying around for the last couple hours?
Yeah.
You haven't forgotten.
This game also introduced the idea of the shine spray, right? It was like, shine sprites come from this game, Mario Sunshine.
Yes, the shine sprites were the
they're essentially they're the stars.
They're the stars, but they're
in
different
all but name. Well, how are,
because they're
how
shine are they sprites. Different? Mechanically, they are equivalent.
Okay, that's kind of what I'm going for. But the reason they are different at all, even though you know it would be a very easy mechanical link to just call them stars, because we've seen Mario 64. And we know that we're doing the same activity. So that would be like mechanical reinforcement, which is a substitute for flavor in a lot of ways. But they made them shines to fit the motif of making things sparkle and cleaning up. And that's the only reason they're shines.
Yeah, because you're cleaning things up and make them sparkle on a fantastic tropical island. And when you start off the game, The island is dim, and as you collect more shines, the island brightens.
So yeah, there's a lot of flavor in that game.
Near the end, either at or near the end, you are offered sunglasses because it's so bright out. All it does is dim the screen slightly. And, you know, put sunglasses on your character model. But if you look at, you know, if you finish a game of Mario Sunshine and get all the sprites and see how bright it is, and then immediately start a new one, the difference is very visible. There are a few other mechanical differences between stars and shine sprites. Everything in Mario 64 was, like, get X stars to open door. Other than the doors that said, like, defeat Bowser to open door.
Right.
Shines worked sort of similarly. You needed to get to the final encounter with Bowser. It wasn't a question of how many shines you had. It was a question of getting certain shines, but those were always the seventh shine in a level, and therefore you necessarily had a certain number of shines, but you could have earned extra ones on the way, and they basically weren't getting you anything as far as unlocking the final stage to fight against the final boss.
Huh. That's a weird way to work it. So what else did they do if there's this collectible that I don't need to collect to advance?
They let you access more levels, and you need to get the seventh shine, the Shadow Mario shine, from each level to be allowed to go to the final level.
Oh, I see.
So it was a level unlocking progression system.
Okay, so I needed a plurality of some, and then
You did have some choice as to what order to do all of this in, but you had to eventually do all of it. Whereas in Mario 64, you can skip entire levels. Because you can just get your required stars in other levels. You only need, I think, 70 to get to the final Bowser fight and beat the game. And given that any given stage has, like, 10 stars in it, you can see how it would actually be pretty easy to just skip a level entirely.
Yeah, so lots more top-down designs in Mario Sunshine than in some other Mario games.
And of course, the reason why you had to do that is... do you mind if I spoil it?
Go right ahead.
You have to beat up Shadow Mario for the seventh shine in each world, and Shadow Mario is actually Bowser Jr. in disguise harassing you, and only once you have beaten him up enough times will he retreat to the safety of his father's warm, comforting arms inside a volcano, and you follow him there and beat them up.
Right. So, as I was saying, top-down elements in Mario Sunshine.
Keep us a volcano
on track here. Enough about the damn volcano.
I like the volcano. You know why? Because it has spikes in it.
Spikes.
Moving on.
My point with all this is that this overall served to strengthen the game, and I don't know why anyone who played Mario Sunshine doesn't like it.
Because you are forced to do more things than you were in 64, and it's not quite as open as 64. And people hate spraying water at things.
I mean, if you're wrong, you're wrong. Spraying water at things is fun.
It's a dumb gimmick to give Mario this jet.
Except it was an excellent gimmick, and we had flavor expectations for what would happen.
It really wasn't a gimmick. It was a design feature.
I really should have silenced my phones. There we go.
There we go. It's not like this is something you learn how to use and get better with as the game goes on.
Now, my ultimate point with all this is that there are reasons for both kinds of design. Almost, like, every game is going to have some of both. There just cannot possibly be something that is all flavor-driven and zero mechanical drive to it. It would be a game with no mechanics.
Yes, it is the magical tea party.
Or, by contrast, a game that has only mechanics. And we're playing, like, I don't know, tic-tac-toe at that point. Or something. I mean, maybe... I think it. You could more reasonably make the case for a game that is all mechanics. But at some point, a human must interact with it. And whether or not you really want there to be any kind of flavor to that, flavor will emerge. The X's and O's took on a new life as elements of the game of tic-tac-toe, rather than, you know, no one who was drawing an X thought of it as the letter X. They thought of it as a marker in the game, signifier. Some of us played favorites. We wanted to be X or O. Why? I liked straight lines.
I despise straight lines.
Yeah, there we go. But anyway, there's probably a stronger case for, like, creating a game that is only mechanics and having it be, like, a valid and complete game. I don't know if a fun one, but, you know, puzzle
How
games...
How much flavor does Tetris really
Yeah,
have?
Puzzle games are pretty fun.
Puzzle games are largely mechanical exercises.
Absolutely,
but...
mechanics first, and then... I mean, okay, things fall because there's gravity. I can... to speed things up, to, yeah, like, push it down, but I can never throw it back up because it's falling, and I, you know, there is, like, plenty of artwork of Tetris or whatever that's, like, stuff, like, falling down, right? You see the blocks, and they're, like, the blocks fall. With little speed lines on them to show that they're going downward, being pulled, yes, by gravity. That's the closest I can get to having, like, a flavor-driven anything in Tetris. Why do the lines go away? They go. They do.
That's the rule.
That's a rule.
I like Tetris a lot.
You're quite good at it. You've played it a lot.
Okay at it. But then we take other puzzle games. You know, we have your Dr. Mario, your Yoshi's Cookie. You could take away the flavor elements and still have a valid game.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be as good of a game?
Man. See, I don't know if that's a question we can ever really answer. Certainly, to lack a motif would probably hurt the game's memorability.
Yes.
You know,
The viruses in Dr. Mario,
you know,
are iconic.
We want them to go away because they're all mean and nasty looking.
Yeah, they're making faces at
they're
us.
They're taunting
under our
us.
Microscope,
come
and
on.
We hate them.
And then when you lose and they get all giggly, it's like, oh, they're giggling at me.
You get mad. You want to beat them twice as bad next time.
So
Dr.
many
Mario would be damaged by the removal of the whole virus pill motif.
I only recognized the other day when we were playing Mega Man X that there are so many enemies who, after hitting you, will laugh. There are way more than I thought. I thought it was just the one, but then, you know, because the ones who swoop in and they hit you, they chuckle. But then, there's the Mr. Pickett.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
Mr. Pickle.
The pickaxe throwing
robot. The pickaxe
tossing
guy.
Yeah. If he hits you, he'll chuckle. There's the log chopping robot with the mechanical logs that, you know, whatever. But anyway, if he hits you, he'll also chuckle. And I'm pretty sure there are others. So this was like a mini motif in the game of, like, enemies that taunt you. There's no reason to even give them faces. They're robots. Many of the enemies in the games in those games don't have faces to show how alien they are, how strange. So the ones with faces, they use their faces to be menacing.
to demean you.
Yeah.
To make you feel ashamed for getting hit.
If that enemy has a face in it, better use it. And that's just another little bit that the game does right. So when you're designing games, there's nothing implicitly wrong with mechanics first. You know, I got this cool idea for a game mechanic. Let's see how it goes. You can make it up. You can make up flavor afterward. Okay,
Wizards
Mario
did it.
Mario touched the mushroom, so he gets big. That is the single strangest thing you could say to me. Okay, I'm gonna like go out and touch a mushroom in the world, and that'll happen. No, I hear about it happening in some fantasy somewhere. Probably not. You made that up. It's just something that happens in this weird video game. Why are there blocks? Some blocks break when you hit them, others do not, because they're harder? I don't know. Can I break the floor then? No, the floor is made out of something else. You can't hit the floor. So I crush it with my head and it breaks, but I hit it with my feet and it doesn't? I don't know. So much weirdness in that game. I touch a fire flower. Why is it a fire flower? Because it gives you fireballs. Why would that happen?
Why does it give you fireballs?
This is so weird.
Because it's a fire flower. The flower is exactly as it seems.
The game is intensely bizarre. Because it's all mechanics. So yeah, you can design from mechanics first. You can come up with flavor ideas independent of mechanics. And indeed, independent of there being a game. You can write fiction in life. You can make webcomics. You can create flavor elements and write them down in your little Moleskine and squirrel them away until their time comes, which I sometimes do. I have a couple of little goblins who represent the game character. My favorite is a little, like, hump with two eyes, and then a tinier hump to indicate that he has legs. So you'll see, like, he's basically like a little lump with two eyes. And it's just like if I need something to represent, like, a character on a screen, it looks like that. So what do you think, Medibot, about bottom-up and top-down design, mechanics, and flavor? This is sort of a huge topic that I'm condensing into a little talk.
I guess I prefer, when I am designing things, to take a bottom-up approach, or at least when I'm designing games, take a bottom-up approach, because I feel like I'm better at that than at top-down design, and I'm more likely to get something I'm happy with if I take a bottom-up approach, and because I'm perfectly content having every game be flavorfully about a bunch of pirate wizards, and it's like, if X is the thing that needs to be done, a wizard is doing it, and that's okay, because you can just be like, this is a thing a wizards do, wizards can do anything, and I'm saying these wizards are doing this.
Yeah.
And, it, like, why don't they do this other thing instead? Well, that's not how magic works here. And I can just wave my magical flavor author wand and be like, magic does X and not Y in my game, and that is simply true.
Yeah, magic's a big excuse for things.
It is.
Honestly.
And that's why I love being a wizard.
Honestly, you can even take a page out of Mario and just flavor it any way that the hell you want, and be like, you know what? It works because.
Yeah.
That's kind of how Rayman does it, too. A lot of weird crap happens in that game, and it's like,
that's great.
I hit the thing, and it made little platforms pop out of a plant.
Yeah.
Why?
Because it was full of platforms, and then you hit it, so it spat them out.
I hit it again, and they retracted.
Yeah, because it.
Okay.
It's like hitting a light switch twice.
Yeah. Oh, there's a flying man who points his hand at me. And if I get close, we hold hands and he swings me.
Yeah.
Why? Because he's there, he's flying, he's happy. He's a helper.
He's smiling, so you know he's a good guy.
Okay. Good guys smile.
The bad guys are always frowning. Yeah. The good guys are always smiling.
So yeah, don't take for granted how many things in video games are atrociously bizarre and just completely toxically weird to the non-indoctrinated.
Love that. I want all my games to be toxically weird.
Be like, this is so weird, I have to...
Like, real talk, I despise efforts towards realism.
Indeed. Games do not need to be simulators of stuff. I mean, Microsoft Flight Simulator was alright, but it was that. It was...
It went out and tried to
be a simulator. I don't need...
Just, you know, in the title of the software we have described...
I don't need Man with Gun Simulator.
And that's why I call them that, because they're all Man with Gun Simulators, and all of them, I'm a man and I've got a gun, and I use my gun to solve problems.
Have you ever played a hunting game?
Ever played any of those big game hunting games.
They're
but
way
I guess
more...
I guess those are also Man with Gun Simulators.
They are, but the big irony of them is that they contain more bizarre elements than the, like, first-person shooter Space Marine games. I'm not even kidding. Even though it's set in a world that you live in, you can go to these parks, and you know these animals, you can see these animals in life. But then they have these really weird things, like the hunter sense. And then it makes the world go all crazy, and then animals show up like bright white lights, as if you could stare directly into their souls. And that's only the beginning. So, it gets quite a bit weirder from there, I'm afraid.
So maybe I haven't been giving these hunting games enough credit.
I think you should play one just to see. You could probably find one for, like, less than $5. Anything on the Xbox 360 that has the word Hunter in the title. Even if it's like Pro Bass Hunter.
Is it still hunting if it's fish?
Yeah. You can hunt fish.
I guess with a spear.
Well, that's a Skulls Cast for another time. Like, the central question, is it hunting if you're hunting a fish? We'll leave you with that.
I mean, we have a subset of hunting called fishing.
We're not getting into that discussion right now.
Not getting into that.
Not. Go play a hunting game or don't. I don't actually care if you do.
Enjoy the mechanics and the bizarreness that comes with them.
Like, hopefully, I have a backup plan, you see. If the water heater hasn't finally warmed up by now, then the tub of water that I left in the tub will have reached room temperature by now. Woohoo. So, I have a bath in my future. Let's hope. Any closing thoughts, Medibot?
Closing thoughts. What can one do to get better at either type of design?
Do it more.
Do it more. Grind it into your skulls.
Skulls!